Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable, high-speed internet. Today, I am joined by Danielle Perry and Christy Brown, who are the respective chairs of the National Lifeline Association's Regulatory and Government Affairs Committee and Aging Committee. The National Lifeline Association, or NALA, is a nonprofit industry group created to preserve and promote the FCC's Lifeline benefit. NALA has also been advocating for the preservation of the Affordable Connectivity Program, or the ACP. With the ACP swiftly running out of funding, we discussed the remaining avenues to save it before people lose access to the broadband subsidy program this spring. We also discussed ways to preserve the program long-term through the Universal Service Fund and more. All right, Danielle and Christy, welcome to the podcast. Danielle, welcome back to the podcast. It's so great to have you both here. I am excited to talk with you both about all things NALA and the Affordable Connectivity Program and affordable broadband in general. But first, I want to give you both an opportunity to introduce yourselves and your roles and your affiliations with NALA. So Danielle, let's start with you.
Okay, great. Thank you for having me, Nicole. It's great to be back. My name is Danielle Perry, and I'm the Chief Compliance Officer at TrueConnect. TrueConnect is one of the largest ACP providers in the country, as well as Lifeline providers. I also serve on the Board of Directors for the National Lifeline Association, and I chair the Regulatory and Government Affairs Committee.
Okay, great. And Christy?
Hi, nice to meet you, Nicole. I'm Christy Brown, and I am with Community Outreach Partnerships. And Community Outreach Partnerships is an in-person, in-field marketing company that helps connect coast-to-coast consumers to the affordable broadband. So we are working with both fixed providers and with mobile companies to help meet the consumer where their needs are, so we better understand exactly what that customer, what their use case is, and then we get them connected to the right service. So, and then when it comes to NALA, I am on the RAGAC committee, which the RAGAC is essentially the compliance committee arm of NALA, and I am also chairing the National Agent Coalition. And the National Agent Coalition is a coalition of agents across the country.
Okay, excellent. Thank you both for that. It sounds like you're the perfect people for me to talk to about the Affordable Connectivity Program today. So we're going to get into that. First, let me give a little bit of background for anybody who may not be as intimately familiar with what's going on and is listening. The Affordable Connectivity Program is, of course, the broadband subsidy program that is providing a $30 per month subsidy for, well, 23 million households are enrolled. Some of those are tribal households, and they're getting up to $75. And there's also a device benefit, one-time device benefit with this program. And unfortunately, the program is running out of funding. It will run out of funding entirely in May, but it will stop providing the full benefit by the end of April. There will only be partial benefit available in May. And then after that, no more ACP. And this is a significant problem because, first of all, a lot of people are relying on it for affordable broadband. The ACP is also directly integrated into other federal broadband programs focused on deployment, like the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, as well as even the American Rescue Plan funded build-outs that the Treasury Department is funding and such. So big problem. We're going to get into all of that. But before we talk about the fact that it's going away and what to do about it, I want to hear from both of you about the ACP in general and your thoughts on how this program has been. Has it been a success from your point of view for consumers, for providers? Let's start there. So I'll let you decide who wants to jump in first.
I'm going to jump in first, just because I think that the most important aspect of how this program has benefited folks is at the consumer level. You know, we can talk about all of the jobs and all of the companies and all of that, but in the end, it's the consumer that we're here for. And there are so many folks across the country who have not had access to broadband services. Some of it is because they're in rural communities. Some of it is affordability. A lot of it is affordability. But making sure that, you know, we are getting in person and connecting these individuals with something they've never had access to, teaching them how to go through the process of getting enrolled, getting approved. It has changed their lives. It's given them the ability to get jobs. It is It's given them the ability to get healthcare, you know, where they haven't been able to access healthcare in the same way. It's helped their kids with schooling. So it's just, there's so many stories that we can share through the course of this time together. But I think that is number one, is just the impact it's had on lives.
Yep, I agree completely. And, you know, illustrating the success of the program is the fact that we're running out of funding. Just something to keep in mind is that when this program was enacted and originally funded, it was anticipated that funding would last for 5 years. And we're just 3 years in and we're out of funding. So it's been hugely successful. And to Christy's point with the way that consumers have been impacted, I think that there's been a lot of talk, especially on the Republican side, about whether or not these consumers had access to the internet before, which I think is a little irrelevant and not really even covered in the order, but we'll skip over that. but the bigger issue is that sustainability and connectivity long-term. So a lot of these consumers would, you know, take $20 that they had today and go buy a prepaid plan, and they would have internet for 30 days. And then when it was time to renew, maybe something came up, like maybe, you know, their kids needed something or the car broke down or, you know, whatever. They didn't have that $20. So they may go a month or two without internet access. And that really impacts the way they're able to connect with society, both from healthcare, like Christy pointed out, education for their children, or looking for a job. So I think that, you know, ACP has been very successful in keeping these people connected over the course of time so that they're able to have that connectivity and rely on it to actually be successful.
Yeah. So I have an interesting one for you, Nicole. So we have partnered with drug rehabilitation centers across the United States. Mm-hmm. And as you know, somebody who is struggling, as people know, I don't mean you specifically, but somebody that's struggling with a drug situation, drug abuse, they go in, they hit rock bottom, if you will. They go into a treatment center, they look for help, they go into inpatient. And generally speaking, they don't have the means anymore to be able to, you know, afford broadband services, whether it's mobile, fixed, whatever. You know, they've been in a struggled situation, and they go into in treatment. And what we have now done is connected them to a mobile device as they leave, because the only way they're going to stay successful in their rehabilitation is to take their methadone. And taking your methadone on a daily basis means you have to then get from your home into a facility to take your medication, have your counseling time, and then you can go back home. Well, many people don't have the means to even be able to get in on a daily basis, and it leads to really large failure in those rehab programs. And so somebody being able to use their mobile device that they're given on the way out of their treatment program as they're sent home, do a front and rear load camera where they can be seen through a telehealth appointment, opening up their medication, taking their medication, do their counseling. Tremendous success is taking place with getting people the help that they need. With the ACP coming to an end, all of the people that are in the middle of this program are no longer going to have access to their phone, because if they haven't completed the program, successfully used their devices to get connected to a job and back on their feet, then they're just going to be left to recycle back through this process. So really concerned about the funding coming to an end.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that example. I think that really humanizes this problem. And I've tried in various ways to get that, you know, human story on this podcast in different ways. And I appreciate you bringing that to light. You know, a person I recently spoke to also referenced affordable broadband as an issue for the incarcerated population. So, you know, I think it's willfully ignorant for those opponents to suggest that only people who've never had broadband before should have access to a benefit like this. So thank you for that. So, you know, there has been an effort to save the ACP, sort of. There was a bill introduced earlier this year, the Affordable Connectivity Program Extension Act, which would have funded the program with $7 billion to keep it alive for at least the rest of 2024. Now, that bill does have technically enough Republican co-sponsors in the House that if it were brought to the floor and got all Democratic votes, then it would pass. But it is not being brought to the floor, nor was it included in the funding package that has now passed and kept the government open. So first question for you both is, is it over for the Affordable Connectivity Program Extension Act? This program is ending, you know, in a month, basically to the day that we're talking. Has that ship sailed from your perspective?
No. Okay. I'm bullish on a no.
Okay. Great. Let's hear it.
I refuse to give up. So okay. I will go down kicking and screaming until they stop taking our meetings on the Hill. And until somebody comes out and just says, absolutely no, we're still going to fight for this program, because like Christy shared, there are people out there that cannot fight for it. So we're fighting on their behalf. There are still a lot of different ways the program can get funded. That the bill that you mentioned, the Extension Act, that's still out there. We're putting pressure on the House to bring that up for a vote. We also believe that, we were very disappointed, by the way, that it wasn't in the CR last Friday, but we also believe that there will be a supplemental package that will get introduced in April, because there were several things that did not make it into that CR that we feel like has political backing, that there will need to be a supplemental. So we're going to, Christy and I both will be in DC next week meeting with all of the policymakers again on the Hill, and we'll be stressing to them the importance of not supporting a supplemental that does not include funding for ACP. So we have that. You may have followed in the news last week, there was some talk about Senators Cantwell and Cruz wanting to give the FCC auction authority over spectrum. Mm-hmm. That's another way that funding could happen, which we're hopeful there as well. Mm-hmm. And then the third way is the Senate Working Group on Reforming USF. Right. So that's a little longer term. I think the things I've just spoken about can happen in April in time to not totally deplete the funds. The working group, I think, is a little longer, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit more as we progress in the discussion. But I don't think it's time yet to say it's over.
I like that. Okay. Did you want to say something, Christy?
I do. I just want to say we have spent the last year and a half meeting with both houses, both sides of the House, the Senate. It's been completely bipartisan, bicameral, doesn't matter who we speak to. Every single member has said that they understand the need and that they believe that there is tremendous benefit through the Affordable Connectivity Program. The only differences that we've heard is some of the eligibility criteria. Mm-hmm. And we're not arguing that. Like, if that is what ultimately needs to happen and we need to reduce from a 200 to say a 150 or a 135, like, let's figure out what that number is, and we can figure that out probably in the next 20 minutes. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't take a long time to solve for that, but let's figure out what that number is. And then let's keep the people that are in most need connected. And I'm so bullish on it, because I find it impossible to believe that it doesn't matter if you're a Republican, Democrat, House, Senate, you name it. We all have hearts, and we all know that there are folks out there that have this need. And I refuse to believe that people are going to turn their backs on these individuals. So, I'm bullish on it.
Absolutely. And I've been in this industry, in the lifeline industry, for 15 years. I've never seen the environment the way it is today, where we have bipartisan support. Yeah. I mean, 10 years ago, when we were fighting for whatever we were fighting for, because believe me, in this industry, there's a fight every year for something. But I've never had a fight where we had both sides of the aisle agree with us. Mm-hmm. So a year ago, if you would have asked me, I would have said, funding is going to be a breeze. But each month, as we go to the Hill, and Christy and I are there every single month, sometimes twice a month for meetings, it gets harder and harder and harder, even though you're in the same offices and they're all nodding their heads and saying, yes, we agree, it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. So I think in the meetings that we have this coming week, I think that the message is going to be, you know, the Democrats have got to push harder. Republicans will vote for it, I think, but they're not going to bring it forward. So we need the Democrats pushing harder. And then, like I mentioned, we need to be united in not supporting a supplemental that does not include funding for this very important program.
Exactly. Okay. And I think we really have to tackle it in two different phases, right? Okay. And I think this is a lot of you know, what we can get to through this time together today. But we need to get some supplemental funding immediately so that we don't have that cliff at the end of April. And we can all agree that we need to make some changes to the program, and we can work collectively together to make those changes. No pushback. But what we can't do is allow the end of April to come and then try to figure out what all of these 23 million households are supposed to do in the interim while we try to come up with the long-term plan. That's not sustainable, and that's just going to make things so much messier than they are currently. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So it sounds to me like your heads are both in the Congress is still going to get this done game. Like, you are not giving up on the idea of getting funding passed that would keep this afloat for the rest of the year, at least, which is encouraging. Let's say Congress mm-hmm. doesn't fulfill your wishes and mine. Yeah. Are there other short-term avenues within the federal government? Let's start there. Can the FCC do anything to keep this program afloat temporarily?
We've asked that question. It's an excellent question. And we don't get a positive response, right? So the FCC is obviously supportive of the program. They want it to happen. I don't know that they have the power to do anything at this point. I feel like if they did, they probably already would have, because they're very passionate about it as well. Our colleagues at the Wireline Competition Bureau that chair this or lead this program, like in a meeting in December, one individual said, you know, this is my baby. I take this personally. So I do believe that if they had the ability to do something, they would. Lifeline has been around, you know, since the 80s. And so as a provider, one of the things that we're doing on our own is trying to get any consumer that we have that's enrolled just in ACP, we're encouraging them to get enrolled in Lifeline. So at least they have a lifeline with, no pun intended, with a little bit of data that's going to, you know, help them get through until this gets solved. So, you know, short of that, I'm not sure, you know, what else we as providers could do. And I haven't, you know, Christy may have a different opinion, but I haven't seen that there's really much that the FCC can do at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, Danielle. I also don't see there being a direct path that the FCC can control outright that would keep this going. What I do know is that many of the service providers out there, both in the mobile and the fixed, have been working diligently to try to figure out ways to support the lower income community in an interim. And we just don't know how sustainable that will be, because the financial model around that becomes challenging. And yeah, you can, you know, do this for a couple months, but then you're going to start to find the numbers start to flip upside down, and it is not going to be a good long-term solution. But what I do know is on the fixed side, they're trying to come up with plans that work, throw in a, you know, first device or something for right now to make sure that people are getting their mobile connectivity. On the mobile side, they're trying to come up with different pay for, you know, for prepaid options to say, here's the certain amount of data and voice that you can get for this price tag, and try to keep it as economical as possible. But, you know, we really need our government to come together and figure out the long-term solution to keep all these folks connected.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to turn to that long-term solution in just a second, but I also wanted to know, you know, this is a lot of communications that have to go out and potentially more to switch people to an interim plan or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's just so much communicating, and already it's a population that's been burned, you know, by the government, et cetera, et cetera. What are you getting from people? What are your organizations getting in terms of feedback on the communications that have had to go out so far? Are people confused about what's going on? Are you worried about regaining people's trust in the future for Lifeline, for the ACP, et cetera?
Absolutely. All of the above.
They're so confused. I mean, they are so confused. The calls coming into our call center increase, you know, they spike right after a required notice has to go out, just because they don't understand. They think that their service is going to be shut off right away. It's been really challenging. And I know Christy's got a closer pulse on the field and the enrollment representatives out there. But I can just imagine, you know, if I'm somebody who's going up to an enrollment representative to enroll in this program that I've never participated in, being told, oh, well, you can't enroll in it. Yeah. But if you already have it, you could transfer your service. Like that is so like, for us, it's ridiculous, right? That's the rule. And trying to explain that to somebody who has the trust issues like you just outlined is so challenging. I think our in-person enrollment representatives out there trying to help this population right now, they're struggling and it's really hard, really hard.
Yeah, I agree. You know, personally, within just my org, we have about 600. Within the National Agent Coalition, we have about 6,000 enrollment representatives that are coast to coast, you know, going all the way up to Canada, all the way down to Mexico border, you name it, hitting every community. And like Danielle said, first off, when we went to the freeze, which said you could only transfer, but you can't sign up anybody new, the confusion that took place amongst the enrollment representatives first, and like, how do I manage that at the consumer level? And then the consumers that are, you know, they're working with an enrollment representative, and maybe there's three people all waiting for their opportunity to get signed up for a service. And one of them can transfer, but the other two are told no, that they need to, you know, wait until maybe there's refunding, but they're not going to be able to get service. They don't understand how that's even possible. Why do they get it and I can't get it? And how am I now supposed to get broadband services or a phone? And so then they're sent on their way. And then the people that are currently getting the benefit and they're getting notices that that fund is no longer going to be there for them, and now they're going to start getting a bill. Then what happens when I get a bill? And then does that mean if I can't pay that bill every month, are you going to term it? Because sometimes they can. Sometimes they can come up with that $30. There's other times when they can't. When, you know, when life happens, a medical bill has to take precedence, or, you know, they're living paycheck to paycheck and a lot of other costs have risen and they just don't have the funds to be able to cover that. So yeah, there is a tremendous amount of confusion and it's going to get worse as we get into the April, May timeframe. So.
All right. Well, very annoying.
It really is.
I can only imagine how you both feel being immersed in this because I'm angry all the time about this. Let's talk about the future, the long-term solution. You brought up the Universal Service Fund. There is, of course, been work around reforming that thing. So let's talk about, do you see the USF as the ultimate place where the ACP or whatever the ACP becomes sits? Does the ACP merge with Lifeline? And what do you think is necessary for Universal Service Fund reform? You know, briefly, that's a whole other podcast. So
That's my favorite. Like, that's my favorite outcome in all of this. Right. Yeah. Not that I love Washington, D.C. It's one of my favorite cities and I enjoy the work that I get to do there. But I do not want to be going there every year asking for appropriations to fund this program. So I do believe it needs long-term funding. And the way to make that happen is, you know, USF is the perfect fit. I do think that Lifeline is a little outdated and it's time to refresh it a tad. So it certainly makes sense that you could have one program that meets the needs of both. Like, so I'm supportive of combining the two programs together. Along with that, there's certainly going to be some modifications to each program. Also keeping in mind that ACP was born from COVID. We had the emergency broadband benefit that then transitioned into ACP. So I think some of the things that are in ACP, the requirements are a little COVID pandemic related still, and we've moved past that stage. So it certainly makes sense that we would look at some of the requirements and maybe refresh those. So I do believe that the right place for this to live would be in the Universal Service Fund. I also think that, well, I know that in order for that to happen, there has to be contribution reform. And that's the part that worries me the most, because I think that we're asking, or we'll be asking people to contribute to USF that haven't. And if they're honest with themselves, they know they benefited from this program because more people are using their services. But I think that will be the biggest challenge is the contribution reform, which concerns me. Well, I think it's the nicest, the easiest, nicest way to make this program sustainable. It's also the one that could take the longest. So that's why it's so important for these other funding mechanisms that we talked about earlier to happen.
Yeah. And I'm going to let you jump in, Christy. I just want to say contribution reform, what's being talked about is broadband providers paying into it and big tech companies paying into it. And those are not necessarily popular ideas with broadband providers and big tech companies. So that's the sticking point you're referring to. Christy, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I understand where they're coming from. But then I look at all of the impacts that the ACP program has had on GDP. And the fact that, you know, for every dollar spent towards the Affordable Connectivity Program, somewhere between $2 to $3 is put back into GDP. I've heard numbers in the like 2.6 up to the 3.2 dollars. So I don't know what the exact number is, but I do know that it is putting more money back into GDP and that people are benefiting from a business perspective. And I think that it's only fair that they take some of that, and it's a small amount of the proceeds that they're bringing in, and put back into the program to help the folks that don't have access. So I do think that the contribution reform is going to be difficult, but USF is ultimately our long-term solution. It has worked well for Lifeline. It has kept the Lifeline program funded for many years, and I think that it will do the same for an ACP or a combined ACP Lifeline, however our policymakers decide to move forward with that. But I do think it's the right answer.
Okay, excellent. And before I let you go pack for DC, is there anything on this subject that I didn't ask you that either of you want to add?
I don't think so. I think you've been pretty thorough with all of your questions. They're great questions too.
Thank you. I'm going to turn it around. You spend a lot of time. Yeah, you spend a lot of time in this world, Nicole. Are we going to get refunded?
You know, I am a pessimist or hypervigilant, as my therapist might say. So I've been, you know, on the negative side of this for a long time and feeling like there needed to be a lot more, a lot more effort a lot sooner. So I'm a little pessimistic, but actually slightly more optimistic now that I've spoken to both of you, now that I've heard that you both think that there's still an option, that there's the supplemental package it could get in, and that you're going to be on the ground trying to make that happen next week. So my hopes are now resting with you to make this happen.
Well, we're hoping to come out of DC next week with the check. So we'll
let you know this week. A bit like Publishers Clearinghouse. Yes.
Right.
Yes. actually, one final really important question for you. Is it still going to be cherry blossom season next week when you're there? I've never been there for cherry blossom.
Barely. So. I think the peak was last week. So
I was hopeful for it. I was looking forward to not necessarily pounding the hill, but instead seeing the beautiful blossoms.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, if you're still fighting for ACP funding next year, you'll have to just schedule your trip a week sooner.
Right.
Hopefully not. And you can just go recreationally and check them out whenever you want. Thank you both so much for your time. This has been a real pleasure getting to talk with you. And good luck single-handedly saving the ACP next week.
Thank you. Thank you so much for highlighting this. Super important.
My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Thank you again, Danielle and Christy, for joining me. Thank you as well to our producer, Pierre Landrio, for making this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for more episodes of The Divide, as well as interviews and insights from the Light Reading team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.